So I want to start this talk on a really positive, happy note. What? Is it funny how automatically that like changes everything? You see death in like big bold words and then suddenly the room's quiet. So you're probably asking yourself, why is the guy on that show that has the pregnant virgin that does all those serious poses and takes his shirt off in slow motion and all that stuff, why is he giving a talk about death? The truth is, for the last almost 20 years, I think I've been like a death explorer, which sounds like an awful title. Probably pretty depressing. Or is it? This is me. By the way, I think every pre-teenage boy should have a picture on a tree like that. With a bowl cut, which my mom actually used a bowl to cut. So, since I was this age, or maybe even a little younger, I was always fascinated by the idea of death. Scared by it, but intrigued. And I remember being that age and having these thoughts and looking around and thinking, oh, well, that person's old and that person's young, and thinking about my grandparents. And I don't know if those are normal thoughts for a young kid, but I know that every time I would go to visit my grandparents who lived in another state, I always wanted to make sure I said I love you. Because in the back of my mind, I wasn't sure if I was gonna get a chance to see them again. Because I knew that they were closer to death than I was. And I didn't want to live with that regret. Which also gave me tremendous blessings because I got a chance to know my grandparents and my great uncles and hear their stories and listen to what happened, you know, in the Holocaust. And hear my grandfather as he fought in World War II and film him talking about the love that he had for my grandmother. Because I was documenting these moments because I wanted to understand. This is my Uncle Louis. When I was 21, I found out, my dad called me, told me that he had weeks to live. He had stage 4 lung cancer, which was ironic because he wasn't a smoker, but he did own a bowling alley years earlier. And having that same feeling of not wanting to miss out, there was also something that I think I was born with that I don't know, the only way you can describe it is there are people that exist on this planet who feel like they are born to go to war. We can't explain it. I cannot understand that. But sometimes I feel like I was born to, in some way, play a small part in someone transitioning from this life to the next. I can't explain it. It was something that was in me. And this is when I figured it out. The second he told me that, I bought a plane ticket. I flew to Naples, Florida, and I called his wife, my Aunt Donna, and I said, I'm gonna come, and I'm gonna be there, and I'm gonna hold you guys, and I don't know what I'm gonna do, but I'm just gonna be there as this happens. First of all, what I was thinking, looking back, I was a complete moron, because I had no idea what I was getting into. I had no formal training. I'm not a hospice worker. Like, what am I doing? Like, it's like a, you know, like a 5-year-old kid running to the front lines of a war. Like, I had no clue what I was about to experience, but there was something inside me that was prompting me to go. I felt like I almost heard a voice, like, go. Like, go, because this will influence your whole life. Go, because you can actually bring something. What? I had no idea. So I get there. My uncle wasn't religious. His religion was golf. The family was... If anyone understands and has been through someone about to pass, it's a very intense and traumatic time. Everybody is aware of it. You can feel it in the room. You can feel it with everything, with every word that's said. It's a heavy feeling. And the nurses were saying that he wasn't letting go. He was doped up on so much morphine. My poor aunt was trying to come to grips with it, and nobody knew what to do. And I felt so calm. I remember at one point, asking her, who is he not forgiven in his life? And calling people he hadn't spoken to in 15 or 20 years and putting them on the phone, giving them a chance to say goodbye while he's transitioning. The room in tears, the person on the other line in tears, because they're getting a chance to actually say goodbye to somebody that they've been fighting with forever. And the chances are, they probably would have never had the fight if they would have been thinking about this moment anyways. Then the most important thing so far that's happened in my entire life happened. It was the final moment. His breathing had labored. It was every 5 or 7 seconds. And I was sitting there, I was holding his hand, and I was saying a prayer, and something told me to go get music. What? I have no idea. I do not have a direct connection to whatever the world is or the other side, but I just heard something. And I asked my aunt, I said, does he have any music? She said, yes, he has his old Frank Sinatra stuff in the car. So I ran to the car, I got music, I put the CD in my then, I mean, we had CD players back then, sorry for all of you guys who were, we had a physical CD player in my Mac. Put it in, holding his hand, praying, press play, Frank Sinatra song starts. I'm saying a prayer, takes his last breath. My aunt is sobbing. I look over, and it's like a different person. And then suddenly the song, mid-play, skipped. And the song that started playing changed everything. Because suddenly my aunt, who was crying, sobbing tears of sadness, started smiling. Because halfway through that song, it had skipped to the song that they first danced to on their date. And the shuffle button was not pressed. That moment changed my life. That's why I was supposed to be there. And I would never be the same after that. For one, it cemented my belief in the afterlife. Two, it caused me to think about my own mortality. And years later, it caused me to think deeply about how I can bring that same level of self-reflection and thoughtfulness to an entire generation, which led to the creation of My Last Days. When I created My Last Days, it was 3 in the morning, I was sitting in my room. I couldn't get an acting job to save my life, and I knew I needed a change. Something wasn't working. I wasn't using myself as an instrument of change. I wasn't really, truly being of service. And I couldn't stop thinking about this quote. Baha'u'llah, the prophet founder of the Baha'i faith, says, I have made death the messenger of joy for thee. Wherefore dost thou grieve? So My Last Days came through me. I created it, but it wasn't me. I went around. You can imagine how hard it is to pitch a show like My Last Days. I want to make a documentary about death. And I'm going to put it on YouTube, where everyone's going to watch it. No, it doesn't work that way. It wasn't 2 minutes long, and it wasn't a cat video, so nobody was buying it. Luckily, we had some good Baha'i friends who had started a company called Soul Pancake that we partnered with, and they were willing to take the risk. Then I found him.
My name is Zach Sobiech. I'm 17 years old, and I have osteosarcoma. I've been told I have a few months to live, but I still have a lot of work to do. I want everyone to know, you don't have to find out you're dying to start living.
Zach was 17 years old, and 14 million people watched his 22-minute documentary. On the day he died, his song, Clouds, skyrocketed to number 1 on iTunes. And the website that was promoting My Last Days, Upworthy, there were so many unique visitors, it crashed. So how does a documentary series about death reach millions and millions of people? Well, I guess it's the one thing we all have in common. And maybe we're all looking for a little hope and joy in the subject. Since Zach, I've made 14 documentaries. And they all have one thing in common. They all feature an incredible, unique soul that has a terminal illness and is choosing joy in the face of their own adversity. It's also one of the hardest shows I've ever made. Because out of the 14, 7 are gone, physically. We have Ellie's mom here and son, Jalen. We also have a very special guest, Diane, from the current season of My Last Days that we're shooting now here, who lives in Phoenix. It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life is tell these stories, because this is not reality television. This is real. But the one thing these people all give us is their time, which if we think about it, is our most valuable asset. The one thing I've learned from every single person I've done a documentary about is that what if we're thinking about death the wrong way? What if we have it all wrong? Isn't this how we think about death? I mean, when you think about death, that's what comes to mind. Think about what's happening in Aleppo right now. You think about terrorism, and you think about police shootings and brutality and all of these things. You think about all of these things. And here's the truth. In the time it took you to read that, 10 people around the world have died. And the truth is, all of you that are in this room right now, and you watching on YouTube, or wherever you're watching, you're gonna die too. Thank you, have a good day, everybody. I would never. I have made death a messenger of joy for thee. Wherefore dost thou grieve? How can death be joyful? I don't get it. Maybe that's why I've been searching my whole life. But the only place that I can go as a Baha'i are to the writings of the Baha'i faith. Because I believe that the hands that wrote those had access to something that I don't. And I have to trust. So if I'm told that death can be a messenger of joy, I have to figure out if it's true or not, or at least figure out how to make it joyful. One of the things I love so much about our faith is the way that we're told to look at the mystical parts of our faith and then use science to back them up. So you think about how can death be joyful? Abdu'l-Bahá talks about how for every physical law in the universe, there is a spiritual counterpart, right? Which is one of the coolest things ever. God gave us this gift, and he basically said, all right, you're never gonna understand anything. So we're gonna give you some simple things to understand, like laws, and then use those things to figure out the spiritual things. Because Abdu'l-Bahá says, the spiritual world and the physical world are mirrors of each other. So, what happens in life that most of the time is joyful? This is one of my favorite things to talk about. Birth. Baha'u'llah says to understand death, you must look at birth. And then maybe it could be joyful. When Abdu'l-Bahá talks about understanding death and understanding life and why we're here, he talks about the analogy of the womb world, of the baby in the matrix. But if you think about it, he says the womb world. Why would he choose that word? The womb world. So what's happening in a womb? All right? You have your baby completely encapsulated in this unique world. And the whole world is built around this growing soul. And this growing soul has everything that it needs. It has eyes that it's developing. It has ears that it's growing. It's getting its food from its mother. It's the perfect temperature. It's floating, so it doesn't have to use any of its growing extremities. It has everything that it needs for its development. And it's growing things that it has no idea it's growing. It's growing arms so that it can feed himself one day or herself. And eyes so that it can see, but it has no idea that it's ever going to need these physical things, right? The baby has no clue. It's just, things are just happening and it's just growing and it's being fed and everything's perfect in the womb world. And simultaneously, this growing soul is existing also in a whole nother world that is so far beyond the understanding of this soul. Yet it has no idea that it's only an inch away. And on the other side, an inch away, there is a universe. There is a sun in which, and planets that rotate around the sun. And other planets that are so far away and they're filled with gas and they turn into stars in the night sky. Oh, and there's night because the sun sets. And there's air that you can breathe because you're growing lungs. And there's ground and there's water. And you'll be protected from the water because you have skin and you can feel the warm and the cold. And there's food and you can smell it and taste it. Can you imagine trying to explain this world to a growing soul in the womb? Let alone trying to explain that it's existing in the same place, it just can't see it. And here's my favorite part. All of us in that big, vast universe, we all know that that soul is growing and developing. We know its due date. We're praying for it. We're eating the right foods so that it grows the right way. We're playing it classical music because it's been proven to grow brain cells. That's right. This world can influence the womb world. We're doing all these things, getting ready for this new soul to come into the world. But that little soul who's growing has no idea. And then one day, this little soul has no idea when it's coming. That soul dies of the world that it's been in for the last 10 months. Yes, men, 10 months. It dies of the womb world in a very uncomfortable, painful process for both parties. And it goes through a tunnel. A dark tunnel, and into the light, where suddenly it needs everything that it had just been developing for the last 10 months. It had no use for it in the world it was in. But now, in this new world, it needs its eyes so it can see and process light. It needs all of these things, its legs, its arms, its ears. And if it doesn't have those things fully developed, the baby's premature sometimes. What, you can't go back. So you can't go back and redevelop those things. That was your time. So what if birth and death are actually the same? Would that change the way we thought of death? What if it wasn't death? What if it was birth? What if instead of saying death, we just said birth? Would we all still run from it? Probably, because it doesn't change the fact that it's scary and painful and uncomfortable. It doesn't change that there's tremendous sadness because we have love and attachment to this world. None of that changes. But what if we could shift and change the way we think about death? And the way we think about birth Because I guarantee you, when you think about birth, or when you find out your friend's pregnant, or a family member's having a baby, it's joyful. Maybe the joy also is for the other side as well. Maybe the joy is because, in our case, Baha'u'llah, Jesus, Muhammad, Moses, they knew, and they know where we're going. This is the moment my daughter was born. And yes, that's not pouring from my nose. I want to leave you guys with a story. When my daughter was going through the process of coming into this world, her transition, it took 35 hours. You could feel a pin drop. Everybody was waiting. Family was waiting by. People were standing by their phones, waiting to see that, waiting to hear that this new soul had entered this world. My wife and I had spent 10 months preparing for this moment. And I'll never forget, I was standing there, and my wife, of course, is going through tremendous pain. I can only imagine the pain my daughter was in. But she didn't even know what pain was. And she comes through the tunnel into the light. I'm praying. And we're singing. And we're so filled with joy. And I saw her little head come through. And it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And she came into the light to more love than I've ever given in my entire life, to a room that was waiting for her with joy. Waiting for this soul. And I got to whisper in her ear a prayer, and music was playing, and we were rejoicing. And then it hit me. That is not going to be the last time I greet my daughter's soul. Because one day, God willing, I pass long before her, and she goes through her transition. And I'm there, singing for her, praying for her, laughing, dancing, welcoming her into the light. So I leave you with this. We get one chance. We get one chance here to grow our limbs, so to speak. So what are you spending your time developing? Thank you, guys.